from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next up on Forum this morning, television producers love to set their shows at San Francisco and film them in places like Los Angeles or Canada. Typically, the only thing local about those productions is the obligatory bridge shot and the title credits, but the new HBO show Looking aims to be an exception, both in setting and in substance. The series, which is shot in San Francisco and debuts on January 19th, follows the lives of three gay men searching for love. We'll talk with the creator, Michael Lannon, and three of the show's stars. That's coming up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. This program hour, we look at Looking, a new HBO series which has been shot in San Francisco and is going to be continuing shooting in San Francisco. It debuts on the 19th of January with the first of 8 episodes. And the season offers a drama focusing on a group of gay friends living in contemporary San Francisco, looking for love and purpose and looking for it sometimes in the right places and the wrong places. And joining us for the hour to discuss the new series, its creator, Michael Lannon, who's co-creator as well as executive producer of HBO and is with us by phone from Los Angeles. And welcome, Michael Lannon. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
We were told that you, I said co-creator sounds like God, and we're told that you look a bit like God by one of the cast members.
So
I can't see you here, so I'll have to assume that that's a visual picture. Thank you for joining us. Also joining us is Jonathan Groff, who is an actor in the HBO show Looking. He plays the character of Patrick. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Michael.
And Frankie Alvarez here in studio. Frankie J. Alvarez, an actor in Looking. He plays the character of Augustine.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
Michael.
Thank you, Frankie. And Murray Bartlett, is an actor in Looking, and he plays the character of Dom. Hi.
Hi, Michael.
So welcome to all of you, and congratulations on getting the series launched. And Michael Lannon, obviously I'm beginning with you. I've got these three actors in place here in the studio, but there's a fourth character I want to talk with you about initially, and that's San Francisco. I mean, you describe it as a fourth character, and I guess you were living here and working for CNET, and that was a little back in, the tech burgeoning era.
That's true. I lived in San Francisco from 99 to 2002, and I did have a job in the tech industry right when it was at the height of the first bubble. And it was crazy back then. It was quite a wild time. And, I had it was such a formative time for me. And later on, after I left San Francisco, I started writing, and I wanted to capture that city that I knew. I had never really seen the lived-in side of San Francisco. It always seemed to be sort of the beauty shots and just the exterior establishing shots that were on TV and in films. I wanted to find a way to portray more the city that I knew when I lived there.
This is sort of real-world San Francisco, which is also a program that's been filmed here, but it's very expensive for filmmakers to work here of any kind. They often go to Canada or Los Angeles, and first of all, let me give you props for doing it here, because not only is it important for the city and certainly gratifying to see you doing this series here, but also I saw an episode, and it really does try to vivify and make real San Francisco. I mean, the difficulty of living here, people having to work together to find a place to live, and the high cost of living that has now come upon us and all that. So I really like that side of it. And you want to get it. In fact, I think even though this is being compared to Girls, and we'll talk a bit about that, sort of a gay version of Girls, which I don't think it is, but it's also been brought to my attention in things that I've read that you want to, or you have said you've been inspired by David Simon. So you want to get at maybe that kind of Baltimore of David Simon?
I certainly do like David Simon's work quite a lot. And I really love some things he said about filmmaking, and one of them being that he believes that you can make a show or a world very, very specific. And by doing that, by creating such specificity of world in his case, Baltimore or New Orleans, he wanted people to recognize it if they actually live there, and he wanted the people who don't live there to be so fascinated by something so different from their own lives that they would tune in to watch the show too. So I think that was one of my goals, was just to make it very, very specific about this world, about these characters, so that the people who live there hopefully can recognize some of it, and the people who don't live there will be interested in that world that's so different from their own.
Well, Ellen Cushing did a whole spread on the show in San Francisco Magazine, and she was full of high praise. She said that it's unqualifiedly great. I guess that's about as good props as you can get. And she also said very, very gay, but she emphasized the fact that this is really more about human angst, more about the post-AIDS era of gay identity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, yeah, I shouldn't say post-AIDS because this is still an AIDS era, but I mean,
sure, what
I'm talking about is the terrible menace that AIDS had before protease inhibitors and so forth. Yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that we really wanted to make a show that felt extremely present tense and meet some characters quite a while after they had come out. So they had adult lives as gay men already, and they're sort of looking forward into their 30s and for Dom into his 40s and seeing what comes next. So it's not so much about coming out, and perhaps not so much about, you know, what it was like during the height of the AIDS crisis, but certainly those things are legacies that our characters know about, and that's a part of gay culture. It's in the DNA of gay culture, certainly. But we wanted to do something that felt very, very contemporary.
Alexandra Stanley also made this comparison to Girls, and she said the difference was that that's about women who take themselves too seriously, where this is about men who can laugh at themselves.
I like that. I think that that's true. I think these guys are certainly self-conscious and can make fun of themselves quite a bit.
But you're being billed as both a drama by some and a comedy by others. This is maybe kind of a hybrid of the two, or how do you see it?
Yeah, I think I'm really proud of the tone we found. I mean, I think a lot of my favorite shows and films have elements of comedy and drama, and I think the goal that I and Andrew Haggard, director, executive producer, we always wanted to find something that, like a tone that was entertaining and funny, but also had an emotional quality to it and a soulfulness to it. It's always hard to get those things kind of aligned and find the right mix of those, but I think we found an interesting combination of those. And so I think it has elements of both.
Michael Lannon with us, co-creator and co-executive producer of the HBO show Looking, which begins and debuts on January 19th. I'd be remiss if I didn't get you to respond to something else Alexandra Stanley said, which she said, probably too sensitive and maybe boring, tame and muted. This is what critics do, but you get a chance to respond to that. What do you say?
Well, that's her take on it. I think that our goal was always to have a show with a great deal of naturalism, a show that felt very subtle but had a lot of emotion to it, a show that felt very everyday, very kitchen sink. And I suppose for some people that might not be enough excitement, but I think that was always our plan, was to do something that felt very everyday and to find the beauty in that sort of everyday quality.
By naturalism, you don't mean Darwinian necessarily. I mean, I think about Theodore Dreiser and Frank Norris, who set his novels here in San Francisco. I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, the whole theme of this series has to do with looking and trying to find something, almost as if that's naturalistic type of behavior for, well, at least this particular culture.
Mm. Yeah, I think when I say naturalism, I just mean kind of a very realist aesthetic and kind of a cam work and a rhythm and a style that just feels quite subtle and everyday. And when we saw Andrew's film Weekend, we thought that that film had a lot of the qualities we wanted for the show, and we were really honored and excited when he joined the program.
This again, Andrew Haig, and I want to have listeners hear a clip from, again, HBO's Looking. In this clip, it's from episode 2. Patrick, played by Jonathan Groff, who's here in studio with us, is on a date with Richie, a barber, who also works the door at a Latin drag club in The Mission, played by Raul Castillo.
Cheers. Two more beers. I'm going to get you drunk tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's going to happen. Cheers. I love this song. I don't know who it is, but I love that beat.
So, anyway, what I was saying was that people like getting their haircuts, right?
Mm, I love it.
You get to hear their stories and learn about their lives, right?
That's
I like
so
that.
Nice, yeah.
You can learn a lot about a person in 30 minutes. It's amazing.
30 minutes is a quick haircut.
Maybe Latin hair is easier to cut.
Why is that?
Chiquito, you're a funny guy.
You're a funny guy. Oh, I'm sorry. I messed up here.
Yeah, maybe we should go somewhere else. I mean, we can stay here if you want, but...
We could just go back to my place.
Maybe let's go somewhere else first.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm.
All right. As I said, Jonathan Groff is here with us. Many of you probably know him from Glee. He's also a veteran of Broadway and loves the smell of jasmine here in San Francisco. Tell us about your
jasmine.
Character.
Just hearing that scene right now gives me like great, deep anxiety because that scene is slightly awkward, but also because Patrick, I feel like, is at a place in his life where he's ready to step outside of his comfort zone and try new things and put himself out there. And that scene that we just heard is a prime example of that.
So how difficult was it for you to capture that? I mean, it's making you anxious now, and the anxiousness sort of applies to the character too.
I'm nervous at how quickly the social awkwardness came to me in this role. I hope it's not a reflection of how I am in life, but perhaps it is. From the first audition that I had, it was a scene from the pilot where that character that we just heard in the scene with me, Richie, played by Raul Castillo, approaches me on a train. And from the audition, I started getting hot, not in a sexy way, but hot in a sweaty armpits way. And I felt really sort of an immediacy and a closeness to Patrick from the beginning.
And we should also mention Jonathan Groff plays Jesse St. James in Glee and also is in Frozen. Yeah, the movie Frozen.
I am, yes, yeah. Indeed.
On the other hand, here's Frankie J. Alvarez, who little experience. So this is kind of new territory for you. You're like that Somali guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm a limo driver that was plucked from obscurity, and here I am today.
But you don't have your lock around your neck like your character has.
No, that was only in episode 4. Yeah, but I have taken it home, and my wife loves it.
An episode that features Folsom Street Fair, in fact.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Talk about your character, because he's the old guy here. I mean, in a culture, the older part of at least the repertory group, yeah?
Well, actually, Dom is actually, in age, he's the older one. But Augustine does have a certain amount of experience, and I think he comes at a lot of his sexual encounters with a tremendous amount of bravado, which, as you'll see as the episodes go along, it belies a lot of fear.
Yeah, I was struck by just how much the fear comes in. And Patrick's character, for example, saying at one scene, I mean, I suppose it's true for a lot of mating or coupling of any kind, but, you know, you're talking about with your boss about whether or not you should be there or not be there and so forth. There's all that hesitancy. And in the character that Murray Bartlett plays, Dom, there's this whole kind of understated romance, but maybe not a romance with a guy who's much older than you are.
That's right.
Yeah. You want to get in the, both of you are kind of looking also for, you're looking for an artist's role as
That's
a filmmaker.
Right.
You're looking to open a restaurant because you work as a waiter.
That's right.
So you meet this older guy who has a flower shop and you want advice from him or maybe money. I don't know, but there's romance underneath it too.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in general, Dom, my character, is looking for deeper meaning in his life. He's, you know, he turns 40 in episode six.
Yeah.
And he's asking all those big questions that you ask when you turn 40 about, you know, whether you've achieved all the things that you should have achieved, you know, by the time you turn 40. And he's realizing that he can't tick a lot of the boxes. So he's freaking out and trying to kind of pull together, you know, some sense of sort of meaning of his life, I guess. And so that's manifesting in, you know, trying to you know, look and see if he could find some sort of significant relationship or And also sort of re-examining career stuff, and that's the manifestation of, you know.
Well, I wonder, maybe you might want to comment on this. Just the AIDS crisis, as I said, has subsided, and this is more contemporary and really represents a different generation in that sense, out of the closet, not having to worry about all that, you know, fighting to get out of the closet or keeping it repressed or whatever. But there was always this emphasis for many years, we've actually done programs on it, in gay culture about youth and how important youth is and how, you know, sexy and exciting it is and so forth. So turning that age of 40 becomes really quite significant. But the character you're with, as I said, is even older than you.
Well, I think, yeah, Dom is very much caught up in that you know, youth sort of culture that exists in the gay community. But he's calling it into question when he meets this older character played by the amazing Scott Bakula.
And famous Scott Bakula.
And famous Scott Bakula. And lovely Scott Bakula. He's a great man. And I think it takes him by surprise because Dom is used to, you know, first of all, his attractiveness has been his currency, and he's used it on younger men, I think, you know, because it makes him feel a little younger. So he's kind of taken aback when there's this older man who seems very sort of grounded in himself, and there's, you know, there's a mutual attraction between them.
Why'd you get rid of your mustache, or is it a fake mustache?
It's not a fake mustache. I mean, we've been doing quite a bit of publicity in the last week or so, and I had it for the first half of the publicity, and then I shaved it off. I was like, you know, I'll mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, well, and you've kept your beard, Frankie. You
know? Yeah, for the most part, a little bit. You know, as a Cuban man, I can grow a beard overnight, so.
You know, there was a blogger in the LA Times, I think it was, who said, this show is too white. Now, you've got the Hispanic side cover. There is a black character, but what about
that's
that?
Right.
I mean, you guys want to respond to that? It was a Chinese person who was blogging, a Chinese gay guy.
Well, right? I think it's unfortunate that people are responding to what amounts to a minute and a half long trailer that's been circulating on the web. And so they're making a sort of rash judgment on the show. But we created 4 hours of this beautiful show. And relatively, I would say at least half of our cast is non-white. And I think that's reflective of the culture and the gay population here in San Francisco. Very eclectic and very colorful.
What about straight characters, Michael Lennon? You got a woman in there, but it's kind of a gay world pretty much, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The majority of characters are gay characters, and most of them are men. That's true. I think part of that is due to the fact that it's very much a show about the friendships between these three guys. So the show is really center around these three and their love lives, and so there's bound to be a lot of gay men. There are some straight characters too, coworkers and other folks around their lives, family members that we meet. So it's not an exclusively gay male cast, but certainly there's quite a lot.
Well, let me ask you, if I may, Michael Lennon, also about the social landscape, the broader social landscape here in the United States, because things are changing so fast with gay marriages and so forth. How does the show fit into that?
Well, I think I'd say that we don't know how the show will sort of fit into the landscape. We just tried to do the best show we could, and something that felt authentic to all of us, myself and Andrew Haig and all of our writers, and so we just really hope that people connect to that. That was our goal, was to make something that felt truthful and honest and very intimate, and hope that the world responds. I mean, and certainly I think some of the stories are tied to the things going on in the world, you know, with all the discussion of gay marriage and LGBT issues in the world, but I think we really just wanted to focus on these three guys and see what was going on with them in their world.
Well, there's a lot of camaraderie between these three guys. I can sense it. It's palpable here in the studio. working together has been kind of a little bit of a fraternal experience, huh?
We're being under very good behavior right now. We're not normally this quiet and like reserved, but
and behaved. Right.
Yeah, it's early. It's before noon. So, yeah, from the minute that we met at the first, we had a screen test together where they were putting a bunch of different people together for the different parts, and from the minute we met each other, we instantly connected, and that bond has continued throughout the shooting of the first season.
I remember calling it, we were the dream team. We kept saying back and forth, dream team, baby.
Well, the fun comes through, too. I mean, you know, it's clear. I mean, especially when you get into the episode I was looking at with the Folsom Street Fair and Patrick, you putting on leather and
right.
And your character, Frankie, really kind of taking him into that world, as sure. it were, initiating him into that world.
That's
and,
right.
I also like your the line which you deliver, Murray, in that particular episode that I'm talking about. It's Patrick's line. He says, it's your line, Murray, where you say, I want to cook chicken for you.
Right.
It's a way to get a guy. It used to be, you know, I want to show you my etchings or show you my paintings in my apartment. Yeah. I want to cook chicken for you.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Taste my chicken.
Well, let me go back, if I may, just to you, Michael Landon, for a moment. The show's going to leave San Francisco. You have plans to film in other places in the Bay Area, don't you?
Yeah, we'd love to. I think one of the ideas with we always wanted to show kind of a big all the different sides of the Bay Area. We shot in the North Bay. We shot in Oakland. There are other parts of the city we haven't shot in. Yeah, I think we'd love to shoot other parts of the Bay. You know, one of the inspirations for me is Tale of the City, which was such a great tapestry of San Francisco. And I think there's so many sides of the Bay Area that people haven't seen yet. So I'd love to show more of it.
Well, Jonathan Groff, you really, for one, fell in love with the city, didn't you?
I did. I think we all did, yeah. But yes, yeah, I definitely did. It's such an amazing place. I rode my bike everywhere to set every day when I was living here. It's such a bike-friendly city. Murray as well. Murray got a bike made for him at the... where did you get your bike made?
At Mission Bicycle Company.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are lots of promotional things in here. Zuni's, for example. And,
right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Stud. And the Stud, I mean, these right. are real places yeah. that people know and
which
recognize.
That was great for us, too, because we had one or two sets, but everything else was shot on location. So it was an incredible, you know, tour of San Francisco for us and all these amazing locations that we shot.
Well, I'm going to open up the phone lines, and you may want to talk to the cast. You may want to talk to the co-executive producer and co-creator and just get your thoughts about this conversation, about Looking, a series that many people are excited about, certainly the people who are involved, but also many who have seen the first episodes. And you may want to join this conversation. I'd also like to invite you to talk about how you feel, gays and lesbians others, bisexuals and so forth, have been portrayed, but particularly with emphasis on gay life, because there's been a lot going back to Boys in the Band. And, you know, we can think about Brokeback Mountain, not only in movies, but on television. And some of you may have some feelings about just how good, how bad, how mixed. I'd like to hear some thoughts about that as well. So feel free to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you, and we welcome your involvement in the conversation. The number, 866-733-6786. Feel free to call us now. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786, an opportunity to speak with the three leading actors in the new series Looking, as well as the co-creator and co-executive producer. You can also email us. We welcome your emails, forum@kqed.org, and we also welcome your postings onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum. And you can also tweet us, Twitter handle @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. With Michael Landon, the co-creator and co-executive producer of the HBO show Looking, which opens on January 19th, and three of the actors who make up the cast, Jonathan Groff, Frankie Alvarez, Murray Bartlett, and you, when we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, television producers love to set their shows in San Francisco, but as I said earlier, often film in places like L.A. or Canada, and typically the only thing local about those productions is the bridge photo and the title credits. But the new HBO show Looking aims to be an exception, both in setting and in substance. The series, which is shot in San Francisco and debuts on January 19th, follows the lives of three gay friends searching for love. And we're joined in studio by those three gay friends, Jonathan Groff and Frankie J. Alvarez and Murray Bartlett. And we're also with Michael Lannon, who's with us by phone, who's co-creator and co-executive producer of HBO's show Looking. And some of you may want to also bring into focus here in the course of discussion other things that have appeared in San Francisco, that is movies and TV shows, Blue Jasmine and Mythbusters, still filmed in San Francisco, Nash Bridges. The Streets of San Francisco, by the way, was filmed in L.A., at the end, although early on it was filmed here, as Dan is reminding me, and Monk was filmed here in Full House. I mean, there have been a number of TV shows, but this really tries to get at the vein of contemporary San Francisco. And as I said, you know, you might think about films, Philadelphia, Angels in America, and how they portray gay life. So we're talking really about locale and setting on the one hand, how it's portrayed vis-a-vis San Francisco, and on the other hand, gay life, how it's portrayed in the television and movies, but also about Looking, which spotlights gay life in San Francisco. And you are welcome to join us. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We also asked a question on Facebook, and we'll get to some of these in a moment. We asked our listeners to tell us what pop culture gets wrong or right about gay life, which is really what I'm asking. And let's get a caller on here. And Fred, you're first up. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm excited that you guys are doing the show in San Francisco, which I absolutely love. And welcome to our town.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My question was more or less just directed at, I happen to be single, a single gay man, and I am in the process of redating after a long-term breakup. Just curious how you came to the title Looking, and as the conversation has progressed, I understand better that it's looking at more like life in general as being more of a human type side, but the title for me, Looking, kind of makes us feel like that as a gay person, you're looking for, you know, the next best thing. So I'm trying to find out how that came to be and what motivated you to select that.
Now, Michael Lannon, can you give us a genesis of the title?
Sure. I think, titles are so hard. They're really difficult just because you're supposed to encapsulate everything into a single word or a few words. But I think we like Looking because it was sort of a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek joke about the use of that word on apps like Grindr or these kind of, you know, hookup sites or people that are looking for sex or whatever, and then also just I think we like the idea of a search. All these characters are sort of searching for happiness, for a fulfillment, and I think that was sort of the gist of it. It's just it feels like an interesting way to show these guys who are at a point, or to talk about these guys who are at a point in their life where they're not completely fulfilled and they're trying to find out what's going to make them happy and what is coming next.
Well, it's also been noted, I think, by someone who reviewed the show that it also suggests sort of the endless problem of choice when it comes to looking. I mean, especially now with the internet and all the availability of possibly mating on all kinds of different levels.
Certainly. I think that that is one of the sort of broader themes of the show, too, is that there are so many options in the world now, especially for gay people, that it can be confusing, even when that's sort of a positive change. Like, for example, with the whole gay marriage becoming legal in California and other places, you know, it creates a whole world of options that you never considered. Like, I certainly didn't think it would ever be considered legal in my lifetime. And now all of a sudden, I can get married. It's quite confusing. And sometimes I think I think that for some people it's easier to be left out of the mainstream because there aren't quite as many choices. But that that is one of the larger themes of the show. Now you have so many choices. Welcome to the mainstream. What do you do now?
Yeah. Again, Michael Lannon is the co-creator and co-executive producer of the show Looking. And Rachel is our next caller. Rachel, you're on. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is kind of just a comment, and it's a recognition of the work that these men have done in creating a story that talks about these people's life. And I find it, I'm hopeful for the day when someday, Michael, you're interviewing somebody and we're not fixated on it being a gay theme, that it be simply about three men searching and looking and trying to find what's next and what's meaningful in their life. And I'll hear your response to that off air. I'm just really hopeful that someday we have that conversation and it's not fixated on the gayness of the people.
Well, thank you for that point. Let's hear what our cast has to say. Jonathan Groff?
It's interesting. I agree with you, Rachel. That's a really good point. And when we were making the show, we never talked about the gayness of the characters or the gayness of the scenes. It was really just trying to create a world. We talked a lot about relationships. We talked a lot about the characters' relationships with each other and their jobs. And it isn't now until we've sort of gone on the press circuit that the big gay conversation has begun. So certainly when we were doing the work in San Francisco, the gay conversation never happened. And now, you know, hopefully it is a reflection that if we keep talking about it, then we won't have to talk about it eventually. And I think that when you watch the show, you'll find that the characters are all very comfortable in their sexuality. And so the show innately becomes about their relationships with each other and other issues in their lives. And hopefully that's a reflection of in some ways where we are and hopefully even more where we're headed.
It's also a reflection of promotion because, of course, the promotion emphasizes the gay identity. But you want to weigh in here, Marie?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I really agree with what Jonathan said. It was never a conversation that we had, and it's been really fascinating to come into this sort of publicity run that we've been doing the last week or so, that has become a conversation. It's almost been a little surprising to us because it wasn't something that we were thinking of, you know, at all, really, when we were making the show. And I think that's one of the things that I really love about the show is that it's not sort of a in quotes gay issue show that doesn't like hit you over the head with, you know, in quote gay issues. It's about these three characters and their lives, and they happen to be gay. And I think that's what we have in the show, and I hope people respond to that.
Frankie?
I know for me as a straight man, it was really easy actually to respond to some of these circumstances within the scripts and to see myself in them. And I know Jonathan had an experience showing the show to his brother and sister-in-law. And same for me and my wife. As we watch the show, we see ourselves in these characters. And so it was really simple for me to make the leap. You know, there's a certain there was one specific scene where Augustine is kind of trying to deal with this long-term relationship, and I've been there. I know what it's like to deal with a long-term relationship and not know to be in a place of stasis and not know where you're headed. And I think I just want to echo that earlier point about the creator from The Wire. I forgot his name just now.
David Simon.
Yeah, thank you. So David Simon's aesthetic about, you know, finding as specific as we can be, there's a kind of universality that is gleaned from that. And I think that's definitely our goal.
When you have great storytelling, you hit the universal pockets. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's some remote tribe that you're writing about, often the wilderness or whatever. If you hit these human nature kinds of things, I'm on my soapbox here, but I mean, that's really what we're...
Yeah,
here's actually a very uplifting and in some ways poignant email from a listener named Sarah who says, I'm 65 years old and I remember as a child growing up in London that the son of our next door neighbor had electric shock therapy to combat his sexual orientation. Now, that puts, you know, the historical realm into this. I cannot tell you how privileged I feel, she goes on, to have seen the sea change in attitudes and acceptance in my lifetime. My question is that, given that the United States is not San Francisco, did the creators of Looking also have the goal to further change norms around sexuality in our country? Well, Michael Lannon, that's to you.
Well, again, I think the goal was really just tell a good story. I think when you think too hard about how your story is going to change the world or how you want your story to change the world, I don't know. I think it's hard, at least for me, to to really stay focused on the characters and the story when I'm dealing with all those outside kind of pressures. So I think we really just focused on the characters we had. So, but I think hopefully, I would be so thrilled if people did see the show and it did change their attitudes and they could connect with these characters who were gay when maybe they hadn't really seen gay people in that way before, when they realized that gay people have a lot of the same problems that non-gay people do. I would be thrilled if that happened.
Yeah, I was mentioning the way gays have been portrayed and lesbians have been portrayed. The L word, for example, comes to mind, and so does a number of other shows that we probably haven't mentioned. But there's been often a lot of emphasis on kind of stereotypes, and that's something that we could get into in a whole other program. Whereas I think what you're trying to do, and let me say this, put on my critical hat here, is just present real people. We ask listeners on Facebook to tell us what pop culture gets wrong or right about gay life. And Daniel writes, apparently, if you're pop gay, you're young, cute, queenie, drink, party, do drugs, and screw everybody. I'm gay and don't do any of those things. Just once I'd like to see an old gay man depicted someday. Well, you will see it in the series, actually. okay. And Matthew writes, there is no such thing as gay life or straight life. Every life is individual and every trait is a la carte. Mikey says, well, it just wouldn't be interesting television if they got it right. another listener asks, how does this show compare to other shows like Will and Grace and other gay-oriented television? Well, I must confess, that's what I was thinking about when I was thinking about kind of stereotypical, right, as opposed to much more human, rounded characters, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that we all, well, I can't speak for everyone, but I think we all are in on this. And with Andrew Haig's film Weekend, it seemed to have this kind of fresh take on a human sort of interaction. And these guys in Andrew Haig's film Weekend happened to be gay. And it felt like something very new and very kind of important in terms of what Rachel was saying earlier about, these characters, do happen to be gay, but they have this, it's a very sort of universal sort of experience that they're having that everybody can relate to.
I'm looking at a listener commenting on our website. Beth says, most gays and lesbians live in regular communities rather than places like the Castro. So why does the media get away with allowing this stereotyping? Good question. We kind of covered this, but a listener says, would love to hear from the actors how working in San Francisco compares to other cities. Were we a welcoming city? Did the food live up to its reputation? Are the amount of skinny jeans simply ridiculous?
I would say yes to all those things. But definitely the food. I actually was reminded yesterday, we went to this little Hawaiian cafe and had some acai juice and this amazing Hawaiian rice dish. And it kind of blew me and my wife's mind. We had forgotten just the culture here is so unique and so specific and just wonderful and absolutely embracing. The food here was so eclectic. We had a great time.
Well, as I said, Murray wants to make chicken, but there's also a lot of stuff about about being vegan and being vegetarian, right, and different kinds of foods, and that's very consistent with this city. Another listener, Eric, writes on Facebook, TV and movies often get wrong that sexuality is an aspect of a person and not all of a person. It's not all bars and sex. Mm-hmm. Looking appears to explore storytelling about gay life with dimension. And Matt asks, and this is to you, Michael Lannon, please speak to the trajectory from working in the city in the tech boom in the late 90s, early 2000s, to producing a series for HBO. That's your career trajectory he's asking about. You were at CNET, I guess, weren't you?
I was a copywriter. I was writing things like, check out this new Palm Pilot application. really exciting copy like that.
Now, that's inspiring to all those people who have dreams of being a writer or doing TV work or something. But talk about how you got from there to here.
I was doing that, and then I was working at night for some documentary filmmakers, just sort of interning, not doing much, or not making much money. One of them being Johnny Simons, a great filmmaker who made a film called Daddy and Papa. About gay men adopting kids. I was doing that. I had a few other odd jobs as well. I worked at a bar. I worked for some criminal trial lawyers. And then I eventually moved
to LA to, because I decided that I would, that I needed to go there to actually get into, the main line of the business and, being the entertainment business. And I quickly met a director named Alan Coulter. I was working at an agency, and he was a client there. And so I went to work for him in New York. So I worked for Alan, who is an extremely talented director of such things as Sopranos and Sex and the City and Boardwalk Empire. And it was during my time with him that I learned to start writing for myself and start writing down the stories and taking notes on all my friends and the experiences I'd had and putting them together into a feature script that eventually became Looking.
Let me bring another caller on. Nico, that's you. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay? I'm on speakerphone.
We can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, great. You'd mentioned when you did the intro or when you were soliciting calls about other shows, such as Blue Jasmine, and I had just happened to have seen it the night before last, so I really wanted to call in. I found it fascinating. You know, even a great filmmaker like Woody Allen, and, you know, he's probably not the only one to blame, but how wrong he seemed to get the tone of the supporting cast. You know, Kate Blanchett was great, of course, but it seemed like everyone else in that movie was just plucked right out of Brooklyn or something.
Yeah, those two guys did not come from the Mission. They were definitely from Jersey or Brooklyn. I agree.
And, you know, it was just, you know, like he would refer to places and he'd talk about this and that and he got, you know, I mean, the different characters, he got most of it right, but it just, I know he's famous for being all about New York, but, I'm sure he's aware of that and even so, I guess not even noticing or being aware of, or again, I don't want to blame him, there's casting and the actors and everybody involved, but it just really stuck out like a bunch of sore thumbs to me.
Yeah, well, thank you for that observation, Nico. And as I said, I didn't buy either of those characters as being real San Franciscans unless they were transplanted from Jersey or Brooklyn. Michael Landon, let's get back to this question about your achieving and wanting to achieve authenticity in San Francisco.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the first part of that question.
No, I was just asking you what you did and what you tried to do as far as trying to achieve authenticity of San Francisco in Looking.
Well, I think it was, a multi-pronged strategy for that kind of authenticity. I think, one, it was just using a lot of the experiences that I'd had when I'd lived there and the experiences I had in other cities. People I knew were the starting points for a lot of the characters in the show. I think certainly Andrew Haig, our director, executive producer, he has a style that's very much about like great emotional detail, great realism, and then also just the whole design of the show, our locations. We spent a great deal of time absorbing the details of the city itself and working hard to pick locations that would be places our characters would hang out. Danny Glicker, our incredible costume designer, spent a lot of time just wandering around the city and taking pictures. Todd Felstead, our production designer, did the same. He just was inspired by the city and used what was in front of him. So I think it was all those things that kind of combined for the authenticity that we were looking for.
And let's get back to some of the plot situations here. I had mentioned earlier that Murray Bartlett plays a character, Dom, and he's looking to open a new restaurant in San Francisco, probably like many hundreds are. there are more restaurants than just the Valencia area now, I think, than almost anywhere in the world. But, you had to play, and I'll talk about this with all of you. You have to play a kind of subtle role there in the sense because you don't want to come on too strong with the flower shop owner, the older guy,
right,
in terms of wanting to get information from him or wanting him to help you and everything. And so you have to appear kind of a little bit like an ingenue. That's how I read the character.
Right,
it was just
like
with Jonathan, when you're dancing with the guy and I don't want to get too plot spoiling here or anything, but you look at him and say, I wasn't thinking about something like that. And of course, that's just what you were thinking of. You have to appear sort of naive or contrary and play both at the same time. This is, I think, demanding on an actor in many respects.
I mean, just on that, I think it was one of the really interesting things about Dom is having to... I think that's what he's struggling with in turning 40. He's sort of... On one level, he's used to kind of charming people and you know, that's sort of the way he's got through life. But it's not working in the same way that it used to when he was a younger man. And it's a real challenge for him meeting up with this older man and sort of trying that same tactic. And the character of Lin, who is that older man, is kind of seeing through it. So, you know, Dom is kind of laid bare in that way. And it's, you know, it's part of his sort of questioning, I guess, of who he is and you know, approaching 40 and kind of just sort of, I don't know, trying to come to a deeper understanding of himself. And he's having to look at all the ways that he used to operate as a younger man that are not necessarily going to work.
Well, it's kind
in
of
the
like,
same ways.
But again, I'm making an analogy here. Like mm-hmm. Patrick has to pretend that he's not hot for this guy that he's dancing with, which of course he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that Patrick in the second episode when he starts to date Richie, he's sort of flickering back and forth between the idea of being a person that always wants a boyfriend and then also being the person that feels like I'm gay and I'm a part of the gay community and I have friends that are comfortable with just random hookups, so maybe I should be doing that. And so I think that the actions that we see him going through in the second episode are a reflection of him sort of trying to figure out who he is and where he fits in the gay community and in his own personal sense of himself. He doesn't quite know who he is yet. I feel like it's interesting to hear everybody talk. Maybe the reason the three of our characters are friends, because we're very different. We're in very different places in our lives. But we're all, as I'm hearing you guys talk about your characters, really at a crossroads, at really looking at ourselves and trying to break patterns or break new ground or change.
You're all in transition, really.
Yeah,
or some sense of self-identification.
Certainly, yeah.
What about, can you talk a little bit about your opening scene in the park?
Yeah. Yeah, the opening scene is a really great reflection of my character. In the pilot, the very first time we meet Patrick, he's going into the woods to get a hand job in Golden Gate Park. And when I first read that scene as an actor, reading it when I read the pilot, I was like, oh, this is a very like sexy, intense scene because it's like a park hand job moment. And then in the actual playing of it, as I got to know the character and as we talked about it more and more, it ends up being sort of comedic because Patrick is the kind of person where the last thing that he would be doing is going into the park to get a hand job. And it's a reflection of him again trying to step out of his comfort zone and figure out who he is and try on for size what it feels like to be that person in the gay community who does go and hook up in the park. And it's just not innately who he is. So it ends up being kind of a hopefully slightly comedic human moment.
Well, there's also a moment with your character, Frankie, that's similar to this. I mean, he's says he wants to make this film about this male prostitute who we meet at the Folsom Street Fair, and you know, be careful about the language here. But you know, he keeps saying, "Do you just want to blank me?" And you know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, what are Frankie's realistic expectations here? You know,
I think for Augustine, I think it's actually it's a very complicated moment for him in his life. You know, he's been an artist assistant for many years, and now he's trying to grapple with. Can you really call yourself an artist if you're not really creating your own work? And so he's inspired by meeting this character, CJ, who's basically, a hired hand. You
a
know?
Hooker.
Yeah, there you go. And so
oldest profession.
Right. And so I think there's a mixture of feelings there. You know, I think he wants to capture something genuine, but I think there is a little bit of an attraction there, you know, and I think CJ does kind of nail it on the head a little bit, you know, and Augustine has to sort of backpedal a little bit and say, oh, I'm not really interested, but I think that's definitely for Augustine. There's so many options that he wants to consider. He can't really nullify that.
So in each of these, there's a kind of dance going on for an actor. You know, how do I act like I'm acting at the same time that I'm really have perhaps some ulterior motives?
Certainly.
Let me go to some emails. Francis writes, thank you for this program. I saw the ads for the program and look forward to seeing it. I remember when programming that featured families that were black seemed new and risky. Now just another part of programming. I hope that the increase of programs like Looking will take the newness out of portraying gay lives so that it won't be unusual, just good programming.
Great.
Here's Maria who says, how can local actors get work on your show? Well, I think that's to you, Michael. Are you using local cast and crew?
Yeah, certainly. A great deal of our crew is local. As far as local actors, we do have some casting out of San Francisco. I think most of our, all of our leads, the three guys you're talking to now, are not San Franciscans.
They're converting, though.
Yeah, completely.
Absolutely.
We definitely are.
Yeah. So what about the – this is a listener named Maria. I think she wants to know how she can get hired, really.
Right. Yeah.
So, Michael?
I would say just do some great work and get to know the local casting directors in San Francisco, and maybe a role will come up that will be right for her.
Okay. We've got about a minute left here. You want to say something about – what people can really look forward to and what you're especially excited about conveying to them in this series? Michael Lennon?
I just hope that these are stories that feel familiar to people and that resonate with them and that they feel something for.
And the actors would concur?
Yes.
All three of you? Hear,
hear?
Yeah,
hear,
hear.
Yeah, and the time that we said we love these characters so much and we love these stories so much, and I think we all feel very connected to the show and very vulnerable in putting it out into the world. So I think the hope for us is that people fall in love with these stories and these characters in the way that we have over the last couple of months.
Yeah, we already have. So we're really excited to finally share it with everybody.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to all of you. And thank you for spending this time with us. Again, the series, which spotlights gay life in San Francisco, Looking, debuts on January 19th. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can, of course, feel free to continue this conversation on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or email us if you have some thoughts about the program or thoughts about what we should be doing or ought to be doing. Just simply email us, forum@kqed.org. Thanks to Michael Lennon, co-creator and co-executive producer of HBO's Looking, and thanks to our actors, Jonathan Groff, Frankie J. Alvarez, and Murray Bartlett, who all joined us here in studio. Murray plays Dom, Frankie plays Augustine, and Jonathan plays Patrick. And for all of us here, well, actually, before I sign off, let me give credit to the people behind the scenes here. Forum's produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. And again, for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.